Dick DiGiulio here on Chicago's very own 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Studios on the seventh floor of Trib Tower here until midnight. After 10:30, the movie reviews will begin. Colin and Eric will be joining us, and we will review all the new movies. We've got time to actually review them instead of rushing through like we have the past couple of weeks. So we'll have all the on-demand movies we'll cover and all the brand-new movies that are in theaters as well. That's all coming up. You can call anytime you want with a question or a comment or a movie review of your own. It's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. You can send your text to 24720, and you can check us out at facebook.com/NickDShow as well. I want to mention really quickly that although we did have a special Nick D Film Club just this past Tuesday with An American Werewolf in London, we have our regular one coming up this week. This Tuesday, November 5th, at the Movie Co. Theater in Rosemont, we're showing Stanley Kubrick's classic Dr. Strangelove on the big screen, 4K digitally remastered. It's going to look amazing. We're doing it on this Tuesday, November 5th. It's only $10 to get in. Parking is free. The movie starts at 8 o'clock, and we will meet at 7 at Bogart's restaurant on the second floor of the theater. I have some cocktails, have some dinner at 7 o'clock, and then at 8 o'clock we all move into the big premiere, beautiful theater, and we will watch Dr. Strangelove on the big screen, digitally remastered. That's this Tuesday night, so make your reservations now. Reserve your seats now. We want to pack the place. Bring your family, bring your friends. We're going to have a really great time. A classic, brilliant, genius of a movie, Dr. Strangelove, on the big screen. This Tuesday, November 5th, at Movie Co. Theater in Rosemont. Like I said, $10 to get in. Parking is free. If you don't want to drive, it is a 5-minute walk from the Blue Line Rosemont stop at the Blue Line station. And that's how I get there every month. And November 5th, this Tuesday, Dr. Strangelove on the big screen. Reserve your seats now at movieco.com. That's MUVICO.com. Movieco.com for Dr. Strangelove this Tuesday night, November 5th.
Now, so you know
make
that
sure you come out and see it.
Dr. Strangelove, that was not the full title.
Well, the full title is too long to put on the marquee. So,
but I love that that was the title of the movie, that he did that whole thing.
Yeah.
It was just, what a fan. I haven't seen that in ages.
Yeah, it's a great film. It's absolutely great. Classic performances, three performances by Peter Sellers, plays three different roles in it. Sterling Hayden and Keenan Wynn.
George C. Scott.
George C. Scott in what I think is one of the greatest comedic performances in the history of film. And why George C. Scott didn't go on to just do comedy after that is amazing to me. He did very, very little comedic work. You know, he was obviously remembered mostly as a dramatic actor, but he's unbelievably funny in Dr. Strangelove.
He plays it so straight, it's funny.
Yeah, Buck Turgidson. It's a great movie. I can't wait to see it. So that's this Tuesday night, November 5th, at the Movie Co. Theater in Rosemont. And reserve your seats now at movieco.com. Now, that's Roger Badish, who is back on us. He's going to be joining us on Saturday nights when we worked on Fridays together. Now, it's odd timing. Roger's back, but Craig's leaving.
Yeah, when he told me that, I almost reached over and choked him.
Yeah, Craig is leaving. Well, you know, Craig, this is your last show with us tonight.
Yeah, it's really bittersweet.
Yeah.
Nice to welcome Roger back, but I leave the show.
Well, you got a full-time gig now, man.
You
are working on, you are now officially Gary Myers' producer.
I don't know that I'm supposed to announce that yet, but yeah.
Oh.
That's true, yeah. That's fine. Didn't Steve Cochran steal your thunder to announcing you got full-time?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did.
So in the same vein, you've stolen.
Yeah, I mean, before I was given the okay to tell people that I was the full-time overnight host, Cochran did it. Cochran's like, yeah, Nick's doing overnights now. And I'm like, all right, thanks.
Right.
So, okay. So, well,
for us, too, it's just a press release. So you actually got to say it out loud. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So, anyway, congratulations
Thank
on
you.
That. And how long did we work together? 3 years?
3 years, yeah.
God, that's time has just flown by.
I know.
3 years. So Craig is not going to be working with us. We've got Dan Long in the wings.
Yep.
Who was probably going to take over as producer here on Saturday nights. And we're looking forward to working with Dan. And the odd thing is that my best friend growing up as a kid, his name was Dan Long.
Weird.
I'm not making that up. And now I've got the two Dans as my producers. So I got Dan Shagrew for my overnight show, and then for my Saturday evening show, I've got Dan Long.
Well, you're getting a little bit older, so they didn't want you to get confused at all.
That's right. It's just my producer is Dan.
Right, it's just Dan.
Yeah, okay, whatever. I was talking to Dan the other night, and I was like, We were talking about like what actors would play us if they made the WGN movie.
Sure.
And I was like, well, who do you think would play you? And he's like, well, when I was working at this one of the first radio stations I worked at, I was a producer, and the guy could never remember my name, so he just kept calling me Matt Damon because he said I looked like Matt Damon. And I'm like, how do you work with someone and not know their name?
Right.
You know what I mean?
But Matt Damon, that's a compliment.
Yeah,
that's
of course it is. Yeah. Well, we were talking about how the – what's the dude's name who did Napster? Sean –
Parker.
Sean Parker?
Is that it?
Yeah. Okay. He doesn't look anything like Justin Timberlake.
No, not at all.
And so you know that when he found out that, you know, he was going to be portrayed by Justin Timberlake, he was like, yeah! All right.
You'd campaign for McConaughey. Is that what you said?
I would campaign for McConaughey, yeah. Right. But I would think that we could get away with Peter Sarsgaard playing, playing the part. So, all right. We got some of our regular features here, and it is it's time for one of our regular features that we always love. And it's sponsored by the greatest restaurant on the planet, the Gale Street Inn. Oddly, my first weekend since I've got my full-time gig that I did not go to the Gale Street Inn. I just feel weird now. I just feel strange because it's the first weekend of my weekends off where I did not go to the Gale Street Inn.
I feel stupid to suggest this now, but can they start sending food to you?
Yeah, just send the food over, George. Right. Yeah. George, my buddy over at Gale Street Inn, the greatest restaurant on the planet, we thank you for sponsoring Drunks in the News, and why don't we actually make this official?
I want bourbon, I want scotch, I want beer.
Ah, yes. This is where we take all the true news stories about drunk people doing drunk stuff when they're drunk and stupid, put them all together, we read them, we vote on them, and it's called Drunks! Drunks in the News! Drunks in the News! Brought to you by the greatest restaurant on the planet, the Gale Street Inn. And by the way, if you would like to be a part of Drunks in the News, you can be a drunk reader and... find a link to a funny drunk story online, and we'll send it to C. Collins at WGNRadio.com at this point still, until we get Dan officially on board. So send it to C. Collins at WGNRadio.com. Say, hey, Craig, I'd like to read this on the air, and we'll work it all out. We'll record it. You be a part of the show. You read it on the air, and as a bonus, you get a $50 gift certificate to the greatest restaurant on the planet, the Gale Street Inn. So... it's a win-win-win-win-win-win-win situation. All righty then, here we go. Yeah.
I want to tell you a story.
Mm-hmm.
About the house run blue.
Drunk number one. Drunk number one.
How to tell a landlady I lost my...
Three Disney cast members were beaten Saturday night by an alleged drunken guest, officials said. Before officers arrived, the call was upgraded because the suspect, Austin DeVanhill, 24, was reported to have struck one of the cast members with a metal pipe. When an Orange County deputy arrived, Hill was already secured by another off-duty deputy in a seated position and was bleeding from his knees, wrists, and hands, and the suspect was yelling. He continued to cause a disturbance in the park. According to reports, Hill was escorted by the two deputies, and he continued to yell incoherent statements and appeared to be intoxicated, then began resisting attempts to escort him to the security office. At the time, Hill got out of the deputy's hold, fell, and began bleeding after injuring his chin and jaw. According to the report, Hill was transported to Celebration Hospital, where he received stitches in his chin. Michael Connolly, the first victim, was punched in the head area, causing a large gash across his forehead. Tommy Bentley was the second victim. He got punched in the face. Third victim, Jessica Brown, was struck in the left cheek by a plastic PVC pipe, causing her to swell behind the ear. Brown was treated on the scene with Bentley and Connolly, and they were transported to Celebration Hospital.
Said I seen you today, you were standing on a corner, leaning up against a post. I said, but I'm tired.
Yeah.
I've been walking all day.
Drunk number two. Drunk number two.
Long as I get my money next Friday.
A drunk German man admitted he probably had one too many when he fell asleep on top of a horse called Sandy after a big night out on the town. Gallons of super strength Bavarian beer did little to warm up car mechanic Gunther Schroeder, 26, when he left the pub in southern Germany without his coat. Having missed the last bus home, the reveler came across some stables with a bed of comfy straw, proving irresistible in the cold night air. When I got inside, there was plenty of straw, but the problem was that there were horses standing on it. I got zapped on the private parts by an electric fence as I climbed into the paddock, and wasn't keen to get zapped again. When I saw the blanket on the horse and the horse looked peaceful, I decided I can't sleep under it. I can sleep on top of it. It was really warm and comfortable, and the next thing I knew, I was being waken up by police. The beer fan came back 2 days later to apologize for scaring the horse's owner, Barbara Zock, and her 16-year-old daughter. I tried to wake him up, but he just carried on snoring all the way, refusing to wake up, so I called the police. Judging by the state of him, I imagine he'd have a pretty powerful hangover. Police spokesman added, the one mystery is why the horse didn't seem to care why he was there and just let him sleep on him. In fact, he fell off when the officers tried to wake him, and they were there to catch him.
Down the streets I go. She hollering about the front rent.
Drunk number three. Drunk number three. To the chagrin of producer Craig Collins, the Boston Red Sox won the World Series this past week, and they celebrated pretty heavily. The Bostonians are celebrating like mad. A few of them got to share their joy with local news. Here is the audio of that. A couple of intoxicated Boston fans talking to the local news station.
That last out, what was that moment like when it actually happened?
You have no idea. 1918, it wasn't the same. It wasn't the same.
Talk about being here for this momentous occasion. This is history.
This is history, and I'll tell you what. I was not alive during 1918, obviously, and this was more in history.
Hey, all right, I'm swearing. Just tell me a little bit more about what it was like in there when this out happened.
I've been alive since probably 1988, and this is the best time ever because I've been watching the Sox since 88, and I haven't seen them win in Game 6 since now.
I was born, I think, around 1988. Oh, God. All right. Drunk number four? Drunk number four. Drunk number four is our drunk reader. This is J Money Christmas. J Money Christmas, our drunk reader. Here we go.
Well, I'm an eight ball shooting, double fisted, drinking son of a gun.
Oh, you didn't know? For drunks in the news, I'm Joshua J Money Christmas. Tanning mom shocks revelers at New York nightclub after stumbling drunk and exposing her underwear on stage. The ultra-bronzed woman dubbed Tanning Mom, following claims that she took her 5-year-old daughter to a tanning booth, hit the town on Saturday night and shocked fellow revelers with her antics. Patricia Krentzel, 44, from New Jersey, was seen wearing a thigh-skimming strapless dress and heeled boots as she partied at the XL nightclub in New York during a drag queen-themed night. One bystander told the New York Post that the stay-at-home mother of five was stumbling drunk and seemed incoherent. And a series of photographs from the party show her toppling over and exposing flashes of underwear as she danced on stage. For Drunks in the News, I'm Joshua J. Money Christmas.
Joshua used to be an intern here at WGN, and I actually covered opening day with him a couple of years ago. I covered opening day at Wrigley Field. Good guy. Joshua J. Money Christmas also gets himself a $50 gift card from the Gale Street Inn. Okay, we got to vote, as we often do here on Drunks in the News. This is a good week, man. By the way, Craig, good week for you to go out on.
Yeah, I know. That's great. But I don't think the vote's going to be close.
I don't think so either, I mean, personally. But let's go through what we got. We got J Money Christmas with the Tanning Mom.
Yeah.
We've got the guy who beat up the three Disney cast members.
Awesome.
We've got the Boston Red Sox fan who was drunk. And we got the German dude who fell asleep on top of a horse.
Yeah, so I think it's got to be the Boston Red Sox fan.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, but again, it's good.
It's a great week. Great. Everybody else could have won
Roger?
That guy didn't exist.
You know, you had me on the first one because I was hoping it was Huey, Dewey, and Louie that got beat up.
Mm-hmm.
The second one, you kind of went right over the good part where he got zapped on the fence.
Yeah.
That was awesome.
Well, by the way, if the you post this one on our webpage, because there's a picture of him sleeping on the horse.
Oh,
that accompanies the story of this drunk guy sleeping on top of a horse. And so...
and the horse you rode in on kind of came to mind when you hit that part, too. But when you played back the audio of the Boston guys...
Oh, man. That, well, yeah. I mean, I think we clearly have a winner. That's it. The idiots in Boston... who won the World Series, they were pretty loaded. I wasn't around in 1918. I've been watching the Sox.
This is so much better than 1918.
So much better. Yeah, I remember it like it was yesterday. Right. Get a haircut. All right. Same bat time, same bat channel next week for Drunks in the News. Drunks in the News. Brought to you by the greatest restaurant on the planet, the Gale Street Inn. All right, we'll take a quick break. When we come back, it's time for Straight Out of Context, the Nick D Show Spies. Straight Out of Context. Here's how this works.
Context. Context.
You listen to this radio station 24-7 to everybody, and whenever anybody says something that you can pull out of context and it sounds dirty, jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to ccollins@wgnradio.com. That's C-C-O-L-L-I-N-S. Anybody sounds dirty, pull it out of context, jot down all that information, and send it to ccollins@wgnradio.com. All right, Craig, how many we got?
Sorry, dude, I was telling Dan what to do with this, and then I wasn't doing it. We have seven this week.
Okay, seven. Here we go.
The first one is from Larry B., and this is Bill Leff.
You got to increase the tip, right?
Oh, God.
That's dirty. Thank you, Larry.
That's how it works, folks. Pull it out of context, and it sounds funny. Here we go.
From Wild Bill, this is Gary Meyer.
I'll put that thing out. I got a hose for you.
Yep. From Ben, this is Patty Vasquez.
Uh-oh.
You see fishnet stockings and you want to wear your rubber.
Hello!
Surprised it's the only one from Patty.
I know. Patty's filthy.
She is. From Dirty Dave, this is Mary Vandeveld on the Steve Cochran Show.
Uh-oh.
No, I don't like the bushy one.
No.
Yeah. Thank you, Dirty Dave.
Dirty Dave. All right, next. All
right. This is from Ben, and this is Jill Urchek Levy on the Dan Kaplan Show. Dan Patrick.
Give me something to suck up to, and I will.
That's the Dave Kaplan Show.
Dave Kaplan Show. All right.
And this is from Dan, and this is Judy Pilak on Bill and Wendy.
They'll just whack you off.
Whoa!
Okay, Judy. We got one more, too.
Okay, here we go.
This is from Greg, and this is Kathy and Judy.
Oh, yay.
I'm sure I do. I have the perfect size box.
Oh, yeah.
I'll play that one more time.
One more time. One more time.
I'm sure I do. I have the perfect size box.
They both do.
Kathy has the perfect size box.
So does Judy, apparently. That's They're awesome. Both trying to say it, yeah. That's their first appearance of what I assume will be
I hope it's so many more. Yeah. Oh, the girlfriends. That's hilarious. Yeah. Welcome to Straight Out of Context, Kathy and Judy. All right, here we go. All right, what do we got here? This is Nick D Show Spies. Listen 24-7. If I'm mentioned, the show is mentioned in any capacity. Jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it off.
There's only one this week. It's sent in by Big B, and this is actually a Nick D Show Spy. And Wild Bill sent this in, too.
Okay.
Sure, don't get to Jillio. Okay, bye.
Jeez. Oh, Joe, she can snap.
Wow. She speaks her mind.
She doesn't have the wine ready. No. She can get brittle, and that's the problem.
Wow.
All right, Joe, thank you.
That's from the Gary Meyer Show. Joe, one of his callers, called in to say, get Brian Noonan to replace you when you go on vacation, not DiGilio for some reason. I don't know why Joe hates you. I yelled at her about it.
Oh, it was a woman?
Yeah, it's a woman.
Because it sounded like a guy.
Oh, yeah, no, here, let's play a quick bit.
Sure, don't get DiGilio.
That's a chick.
Don't get DiGilio.
Don't get DiGilio.
Don't get DiGilio. All right, have another cigarette. It's kind of not up to Gary.
No, not at all. And he
kind of not up to Gary.
Her, yeah.
Yeah,
he hung up on her.
Yeah, he hung up on her. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, she sounded drunk. So.
She always sounds drunk.
Oh, yo, she's like a regular caller.
All the time.
All right. What's her name, Jill?
Her name is Joe.
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 Her name is Joe.
Yes.
Okay. Joe, I love you. I love you, Joe. You know she's listening.
She is. I guarantee it.
You know she's listening. Right. She hates me, and she probably listens every single night.
She probably missed Noonan Show all the time and just listens to you.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. All right. Now don't get DiGilio. Now DiGilio. You sure that wasn't Linda Blair from The Exorcist? You sure? I don't know. Sounded to me like her head's spinning right now and she's spitting up pea soup somewhere.
Yeah.
I don't get the Jell-O. Somebody go get me my cool menthols, will ya? Oh, man. Nick DiGilio here on Chicago's very own 720 WGN. We are about to do the movie reviews right here with Eric and Colin. Eric is here. I believe Colin is calling in. And we'll get to these guys in a second with the movie reviews. If you have any questions or comments movie-related or movie reviews of your own, you can call us at 312-981-7200. We don't have to rush through it this week. We can actually review and talk about all of the on-demand movies because that's one of the major features now of our movie review segment because so many movies you can see on-demand before they come out in theaters or on the same day as theaters, and it's a great option you know, to watch on your television. So you can check that out. And that's right now you can call us at 312-981-7200, plus reviews of all the movies that came out in theaters. It's a pretty big week. Next week, though, is a real big one for me, at least. One of the most highly anticipated movies is coming out, and we're going to talk about that one next week, but we'll mention it here. This is Eric. Hi, Eric.
Hello.
And Colin. Hi, Colin.
Hello.
Hi, guys. So next week is Dallas Buyers Club, which I can't even explain to you how unbelievably excited I am about this movie.
You haven't seen it yet?
No, I've not seen it yet. Colin, have you seen it?
No, I'm seeing it Thursday.
Okay, all right. I will be seeing it It's opening at River East on Friday and a couple of other theaters, and I will be there on Friday absolutely to see it. It's the first thing I'm going to do. So I cannot wait to see it. Matthew McConaughey, Jared Leto. I know, Eric, you've already seen it, and you spoke very highly of it, and especially about the work that McConaughey does.
Yeah, and I think the Oscar is his to lose at this point.
Yeah, and you know what? It's about time. I've loved this. You guys know this. I've loved this guy since Dazed and Confused. And,
sure.
You know, he went through a period where he did a lot of those terrible rom-coms, and, you know, Sahara was kind of a dumb move on his part, and... But, you know, as we've talked about, the last 3 years of this guy's career has just been unbelievable. I mean,
yeah.
How many actors have gone on, like, a stretch this strong? I mean, I can't even think.
DiCaprio, maybe?
Yeah.
It's a small list.
The heyday of Pacino in the 70s, maybe? You know, and De Niro, like, back in those days?
Yeah, Hanks.
Hanks, probably. Yeah. Oh, man.
Costner had a good run from the mid-80s up to about the 90s.
Yeah.
So, early 90s, anyway.
Wow. I'm so happy for McConaughey. He just rules. And by the way, I don't know. I know, Eric, you've been staying away from trailers.
Yes.
I watch them all the time.
Mm-hmm.
The new trailer for The Wolf of Wall Street.
Oh, I saw it.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't even know if I'm going to make it through the running time of that movie without my head exploding. I swear to God.
Looks pretty great.
It looks so great. It looks like one of the most. I mean, and DiCaprio is going to be awesome in it. And so, Jonah Hill with the teeth.
Yeah.
Colin, have you seen the trailers for this movie?
Not the new one. No, I saw the old one that came out over the summer. But
the new one's amazing.
The new one's the Jonah Hill show.
Yeah, it's all pretty much all about Jonah Hill. The new one.
Yeah.
There's very little McConaughey in it. The last one had that great ending.
Yeah.
Where they're sitting at the table and McConaughey's like doing that thing with his chest. I was like, what in God's name is happening here? That's just going to be fantastic. Opens Christmas Day. Hopefully, right?
Yeah, no, it's set for Christmas Day.
Oh, good, good. Because I know that there were rumors that it wasn't going to open until next year, which is entirely unacceptable.
Yeah, it's cut down. It was over 3 hours at one point. I guess now it's about 165 minutes.
Whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't care. It could be 600 minutes. I don't care. All right, so let's talk about On Demand. What do we know about some of these? We haven't seen them. Angels Sing. Tell me about Angels Sing.
Angels Sing is a film starring Harry Connick Jr.
Is he playing the same character he played in Copycat, I hope?
I think he's playing the same character he played in Hope Floats.
Oh, God.
Actually, so I think he went the other way.
I got to tell you, I love him in Copycat.
Sure.
Yeah, and I love
Psycho,
that movie.
Southerner serial killer.
That movie rules, by the way.
Yeah.
All right, so, Harry Connick.
Okay, so try and get through this plot, if you will. As a child, Michael Walker wished every day could be Christmas. That is until a tragic accident crushed his holiday spirit. Maybe his dad went down the chimney in a Santa Claus something.
By the way, December 10th, I'll be showing that at Movieco.
Perfect.
Yep.
30 years later, Michael still can't muster any joy for the holidays, despite encouragement from his playful wife and well-intentioned parents. Mm. But when his son faces a tragedy, Michael needs to make amends with his past. A mysterious man named Nick gives Michael a gift and instills in him the courage to find the joy that he lost. Enjoy, ladies and gentlemen.
A mysterious man named Nick.
Yeah.
By the way, you can see this at the streets of Woodfield if you'd like.
Oh, good.
Yeah. So if you want to see it on the big screen.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can do that. All right.
Is it Nick DiGiulio or is it St. Nick? We don't know. We'll see it.
Okay. All right. Now, this next one, I'm definitely going to watch. I'm really excited about it. And I really, really, really hope they don't screw it up. Tell us about Big Sur.
Well, it's a recounting of Jack Kerouac's cabin about his, you know, sojourns in Big Sur, owned by the poet Lawrence Ferlinghetti.
Yeah.
And it's directed and written by Michael Polish.
Yeah, man.
Polish Brothers. Stars Jean-Marc Barr and Kate Bosworth, Josh Lucas. The Sundance premiere this year. Heard some mixed things about it, but I think everyone was pretty much in agreement that it was certainly better than On the Road.
Yeah. Well, so. I'm really curious about this. I saw the trailer for it. The trailer looks great. And I'm really hoping they don't screw it up. By the way, this is playing at the River East. I wasn't even aware of that.
Oh, okay.
It is playing at the River East, and so maybe I'll go see it on the big screen. I don't know, but it is available on demand. A Story of Jack Kerouac. So, all right, looking forward to that. I am at least. All right, now this is this next one. Is it a documentary?
It is not. It is a fictional tale about CBGB.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Tell us now about CBGB.
Well, that's exactly what it is. It's about the sort of the formation of CBGB, and Alan Rickman plays Hilly Kristal, and it's about, you know, all the various acts and bands that you know got their big starts there. You know, and it's a pretty big cast. Malin Ackerman plays Debbie Harry.
Ooh,
I know. I don't know about that. Who we got here? Kyle Gallner plays Lou Reed.
Yeah.
Rupert
Taylor Hawkins plays Iggy Pop.
Yeah.
I don't even know who that is. Who's Taylor Hawkins? Should I know who that is?
No.
Okay.
No idea. let's see. Rupert Grint plays Cheetah Chrome.
Hmm.
Joel David Moore from Avatar plays Joey Ramone. Anna O'Reilly plays Mary Herron. Yeah, I mean, so it's got all these people, you know, playing, but it's not a documentary, obviously.
Oh, okay. All right. Let's see. I'm looking at Taylor Hawkins. Taylor Hawkins, it seems to me, is the guy from the Foo Fighters. It's the guy from the Foo Fighters. He's the drummer of the Foo Fighters, and he's playing Iggy Pop.
Did not know that.
Wow. All right.
There's just a lot of big names, I mean, big musical names being portrayed in this movie. There's somebody playing Sting. There's somebody playing David Byrne. I'm very curious about this one.
Yeah, we'll have to check that out.
Somebody playing Eddie Smith. I mean, you know,
CBGB is now available on demand. Yeah, that's one that's piquing my interest right there. No question about it. All right, what about Impaler?
I'm sorry, it's The Impaler.
The Impaler.
Actually, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'm looking at it right now. Yeah.
Yeah. It's an interesting poster.
Yes, it is.
Seven high school friends begin their Euro trip at the actual castle of Vlad the Impaler, where he supposedly sold his soul to the devil over 500 years earlier, but the decrepit castle's past envelops them in a bloody ritual.
Nice.
They do. So,
all right.
The Impaler.
The Impaler. And the poster is pretty insane.
Mm-hmm.
All right, okay. So that's another vampire thing happening right there.
Yeah.
By the way, did either of you guys watch Dracula?
No.
Oh,
no.
Oh, my God.
No.
Oh, my God.
Don't care.
Yeah. Horrible. All right. Now, this next one, Last Days on Mars.
Yeah.
I'm kind of interested in.
I am interested in this, too.
Because of the cast.
Yeah, I was hoping to see this before. It's on demand. It's going to be in theaters in December. I don't know if it's open in Chicago, but it is on demand.
Yeah.
And it stars Liev Schreiber, and it's a science fiction tale. It's about a group of astronauts who succumb one by one to a mysterious and terrifying force while collecting specimens on Mars.
Mm.
So I guess the title is a spoiler alert.
Yeah. Elias Koteas is in it, too.
Yes, he is. And Olivia Williams from Rushmore.
Right. Olivia Williams, man, she doesn't work enough.
No, she was just in something.
Was she?
I don't know.
Wasn't she in a movie? Wasn't she in a movie with Bill Murray, and it wasn't good?
Other than Rushmore?
That's what I'm saying. Because it was like they were
Hyde
in a
Park on Hudson.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking of. She's in that, and Anna Karenina.
Oh, that's right. Anna Karenina I liked, but that Hyde Park movie.
No good.
And I was like, oh cool. They're going to be reunited. Because they were so awesome in Rushmore. And I was like, what the hell is this?
Mm-hmm.
All right. And then what do we got? A Perfect Man is the next movie that's available on demand.
A Perfect Man.
Yeah.
Yes. And this one stars Gene Triplehorn and Liev Schreiber.
Wow.
A womanizing husband inadvertently falls back in love with his wife over the phone when she pretends to be another woman.
Hello.
Yeah. So.
Uh-huh.
So, surprise.
Yeah. It's your wife.
Yeah.
All right. I don't know.
He can't tell his wife's voice.
No. She's probably, like, doing some weird voice.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. So that's available on demand. This is the feature film debut of the director, whose name is Kees Van Oostrom.
Yeah, it's a good name.
That's a very good name.
Mm-hmm.
Very solid name.
Sounds like it could be on Dracula.
Yeah. You guys, it's so ridiculous, the show. You can't, you seriously can't imagine how unbelievably ridiculous the Dracula show is. Oh, my God. All right, hang on, okay?
Okay.
And we'll get to the regular movies that are in regular release. That's your on-demand movies. Angel Sing, Big Sur, CBGB, The Impaler, Last Days on Mars, and A Perfect Man. All available on demand. If you've seen any movies that are in theaters and you want to talk about them, if you have questions or reviews, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. Nick DiGilio on WGN. Nick DiGilio here on Chicago's very own 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate studio, and it is the movie reviews. I forgot to play the theme before we started. We bring back Eric. Hi, Eric.
And hello.
Colin. Hi, Colin.
Hello.
All right, before we get to the latest movie reviews, this is Alan on WGN. Hi, Alan.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
So, that movie, CBGB?
Yeah.
The most incredible cast I've ever seen in a movie. I've watched the movie probably 20 times already.
Wow.
Wow.
20 times?
Are you the director of the movie?
Wow.
I am not. I just love the movie. You know, have a terrible day at work, come home, watch it.
All right. So
Do you like the, are you a big fan of all the music in it? I mean, do you own albums by all these artists? I mean,
you're a fan of that era in New York, CBGB?
Yes and no. Like, I'll listen to it, but it's not, like, I normally listen to death metal because I'm a 27-year-old kid, so.
But you like this movie, obviously. Yeah. If you watched it 20 times in a row, you obviously liked it. Well, that sounds like a recommendation, guys.
Okay.
You watch it 20 times.
I'm going to watch it anyway, but now I'm really excited. Okay.
All right. Alan, thanks for the call, man. We got to move on. Colin, why don't you tell us about Blue is the Warmest Color?
All right, well, this is the big 3-hour French film that was the big hit at the Cannes Film Festival last year, and it tells the story of a high school girl named Adele, who at the beginning of the movie has a brief relationship with a guy at school, only to find that she doesn't feel attracted to him, and she breaks up with him, and much to her surprise, though, she does find herself having late-night fantasies about a girl she happened to see on the street with blue hair and who, you know, doesn't go to her school, and her name is Emma. One night, Adele goes out with a gay male friend of hers to a gay bar, and she wanders into the lesbian bar, and she happens to meet Emma. and the two start to talk, and they slowly build a relationship. Eventually, they have sex, they meet each other's families, both of whom are very accepting of their daughter's choices, and, you know, it's France, of course. And, you know, they build a life together over time. A few years later, we see them living together. Adele is a teacher, Emma is an artist who is gaining attention for her nude illustrations of Adele. As you'd expect, as time goes on, there's some tension building between the two, and one of the strengths of the film is that the tension is not solely instigated with them, you know, being lesbians, but with the fact that one's an artist who, you know, has to live off her talent, and the other is a teacher who is more of a, which, you know, is more practical. It's more of a feeling of loneliness that settles in more than anything else. This is a three-hour film, and even in indie circles, we don't see too many three-hour films anymore. We certainly don't see them out of Hollywood anymore. Last one was King Kong, I think. But I did not mind the running time here. There's a naturalism here that the director achieves that is always interesting to watch. The two actresses are extraordinary. Really, I mean, just great. And I never got the feeling that the film was overstaying its welcome. It is also rated NC-17, and for good reason. There's a lot of sex in this film, much of it explicit and perfectly, I mean, just absolutely natural. There's no dark lighting, you know, or music to tell you how to feel. It's just raw sex that at times goes on for a long time. It might be an endurance test for some people, probably more so for women than for men. But it adds to the realism of this relationship, which is full of wonders, but also full of sorrows, and never once hits a false note. I think this is a really great film, actually, the best of the week.
All right, Eric?
I like the film quite a bit, too, but I did have a bit of a problem with the running time. I think for the first 2 hours of the film, it's really quite great. There are a few films that really sort of give us, I can't even recall one, that really sort of gives us that sort of that first sense of, you know, when someone sort of realizes, you know, whether or not, you know, what their sexual preference is, and this movie really kind of nails that, I think. And I think that the build-up of the relationship, I mean, this is not something like Brokeback Mountain where the movie is, you know, as natural as it possibly can be while, you know, also kind of trying to be sort of a statement film at all. It's not. This is a film that is absolutely just natural, as Collins kept saying, use the word natural. Well, when the film does sort of break off, after the sort of the tension sort of builds and the two of them, you know, have their issues, the film really for like the last sort of 45-50 minutes, you know, it's like how many scenes of her teaching do we really need to see, you know, get us to that kind of confrontation scene that we're waiting for. So the final 45-50 minutes, you know, went on a bit too long. I think that could have easily been cut down and not lost any of the impact. I think it could have actually increased the impact of the sort of the devastation of this relationship. But it is a very good film and worth checking out.
Okay, I didn't get a chance to see it because one, it's 3 hours long, and I didn't have time. But I'm interested in seeing it. I've read so many good things about it, and I'm looking forward to it. So that's a couple of good reviews. One really strong review from Colin, and yet a good review from Eric for Blue is the Warmest Color, which is playing at the River East, the Landmark, and I believe in Evanston. Those are the three places that you can see it. Yes. So, all right. We'll take a quick break. We got the news coming up and then more movie reviews. And if you would like to jump in, it is 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. More movie reviews coming up with Colin and Eric. And we shall return. It's Nick DiGilio on WGN. Nick DiGilio here, and we are live in the Allstate Studios on the seventh floor of Trib Tower. It's the movie reviews, as you know. We've moved them from midnight on Fridays, Saturday nights after 10:30. The phone number, if you have a comment or a question, is 312-981-7200. Colin and Eric from eFilmCritic.com join us every week to review the new movies, and we've got some more to talk about. Colin and Eric, welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
Hello.
By the way, I have to stay, I always forget, I have to stay away from Facebook on Saturday nights after 10:30.
Why is that?
Because everybody's posting everything about SNL.
Ah, yes.
And I like to save that little treat for me for tomorrow.
You like save your disappointment for the next day.
Hey, come on now. Especially because, like, the hottest woman on the planet is the host tonight. So I'm getting prepared to fall off my couch a few times while watching that. So anyway, I got to stay away. But Kerry Washington, by the way, is the host. And, mm-hmm. So I love her. All right, let's get back to the movies here. And let's see. Eric, why don't you tell us about Las Vegas?
Okay. Las Vegas is the story of four friends from way back when who have kind of, you know, drifted in and out of touch over the years. Now most of them are in their late 60s, early 70s. They're played by Michael Douglas, Robert De Niro, Morgan Freeman, and Kevin Kline. Douglas is getting married to a woman half his age. He is sort of, you know, seeing people die around him, and he doesn't want to be, you know, he just wants to continue living life as best he can. He's certainly been the most successful out of his friends. And he's gathering them all together for a weekend in Vegas to basically have his bachelor party. Morgan Freeman has had some health problems, so he has to sneak out of his house and away from his family so they don't worry about him. Kevin Kline is kind of settling into, you know, the last part of his life, and his wife is basically giving him a hall pass for the weekend, giving him a Viagra pill and a condom to enjoy his weekend in Vegas. And then De Niro's character, his wife has passed away, and he holds a grudge against Michael Douglas. Character for reasons unknown until later in the movie. So for them, through wacky circumstances and the infighting going on between Douglas and De Niro, are going to enjoy this, you know, this weekend while De Niro is trying to either sabotage Douglas's wedding or give him some really good advice that he's not really in love with this person. When you got a cast like this, it's either going to go one of two ways. Either it's going to be exactly, you know, the kind of reunion, or not reunion, but the kind of gathering that you've always hoped for, just to see these four guys play off each other, for the first time, would be so great. Or it's going to be a really lazy contrivance where the cast, putting this cast together is the only thing worth seeing. Guess which one this one is? It's definitely the latter. This is a movie that winds up being more depressing than funny. And surprisingly enough, even though the movie is called Las Vegas, this movie doesn't really turn into any kind of maudlin bucket list type thing where one of them is really dying and we're really going to see this is going to be their Las Vegas. It's not that at all. In fact, at the end of the movie, there's no reason why they can't get together again for another weekend in Vegas. So who knows if we get a sequel to this movie. What I was really shocked at is just how little Douglas and De Niro have to do in this movie. They basically just have, you know, they get to, you know, to play off each other by being combatants. And that's really upsetting. It's just nothing they get to do is even approaches a level of funny. Kevin Kline gets pretty much all the good laughs in the film, the four or five decent ones that there are, mostly just, you know, running around and walking into rooms and saying, "I have a condom, please sleep with me." Morgan Freeman has a really good drunk scene, but you've seen that in the trailer, so you don't need to go see the movie for that. At the end of the night, I was just more depressed than struck with hilarity, so this is definitely a skip.
All right, Colin, Las Vegas.
Yeah, it's you can pretty much telegraph every moment and every subplot and every, you know, storyline arc that this movie, you know, is going to take or is going to make. I think there are funny moments in it, most, like Eric said, mostly from Kevin Kline. And, yeah, Morgan Freeman's drunk moment is actually pretty funny. But for, you know, a cast this strong, you need more than that. You know, this is one of those very forgettable films that assembles a few Academy Award winning actors, you know, for the sake of, you know, watching them try to make an attempt at some crude humor and Viagra jokes. And you just kind of come away from it wondering why they wasted so much time on material so slight. And then you throw in Mary Steenburgen, who's also in this film. And Eric, I gotta ask, you're a Vegas guy, of course. Mm-hmm. What is that contraption that she and Michael Douglas get into at the top of the building?
That's the Stratosphere Hotel, and on the top of the hotel, they have a number of various amusement rides. There's a roller coaster that goes around the top. There's a thing that shoots you up to the top of the spear. The spire, so you can see the entire city. And then that thing is one of the newer things in the last 5 or 6 years, where it's essentially like a roller coaster, except it looks like they're dropping you off the side of the building.
Does it drop, though? I mean, because in the movie, it just kind of goes forward.
If it drops, you would die.
Okay. Well, I know they drop, but yeah.
Yeah, it takes you. They put you on an angle, and then it drops down like it's you're going down a roller coaster hill. But it stops before you fall off the side of the building and die.
Yeah,
That sounds like a lot of fun.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean that was a part of the movie going. Well, I can't believe some human beings get in this thing. I'm a little nervous now. But at least it interrupted the sort of the boredom of the film. Yeah, this was definitely, like Eric said, a skip it. Definitely not recommended.
Oh, it's terrible. It's a terrible. Let's call a spade a spade. This is a bad movie. I will say this. I did laugh at Kevin Kline. I thought Kevin Kline was by far the best thing in the movie because he was given all of the juicy stuff. But this is just as lazy and as bad as it gets. You often wonder when did De Niro just stop? You know, I mean, he was fantastic last year in the David Russell movie.
Mm-hmm.
But when was aside from that? When was the last time like De Niro showed up?
You know, Stone.
Stone. Yes. Okay. Yeah. Stone. That's a great film, which six people saw. So.
Yeah, I would say sometime after the success of Analyze This and Meet the Parents.
Yeah, it all
sometime
went.
Sometime after that, because even then we were going, oh, look, De Niro's doing comedy and these are pretty funny.
Yeah.
After that, it seemed to go in the tank.
Yeah, yeah. And I'll as bad as he is in this, or he's just non-committal. He's not really bad in it. It's just, he clearly doesn't care.
There's nothing to do.
Yeah. I will never, ever forgive him or forget Godsend, which is still, to me, the quintessential ridiculous Robert De Niro performance. And I've seen that movie like 3 or 4 times because of it. It's so bad. Mm-hmm. It's so ridiculous that's the one. You know, everybody talks about the Rocky and Bullwinkle movie as being like the, you know, the pinnacle of awfulness for him.
That might, maybe that's the one. That's the one where everything went downhill.
Yeah, I think that was, I think we could pinpoint that. But Godsend is the worst performance that Robert De Niro's ever given. So he's not as bad in this as he was in Godsend. But this is just a bad movie. It's lazy, it's stupid. People are comparing it to, the Hangover.
Hangover.
It's not quite as bad as the Hangover movies. But it is bad. Generally, I like all four of these guys, but this is just—it's not good. The only guy who comes away unscathed in this movie, as far as I'm concerned, is Kline.
So, yep.
Yeah, that's not good. All right, we'll take a quick break. We come back, we got more to talk about. Colin and Eric are here, and if you want to join us, it's 312-981-7200. It's the movie reviews on Saturday night, right here on WGN. Yeah, Nick DiGilio here on Chicago's very own 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Reminder to turn your clocks back an hour at 2 a.m. boom, it becomes 1 a.m. So before you go to sleep, turn those clocks back an hour. Don't forget about it. Get an extra hour of sleep or an extra hour of whatever you're going to do. Colin Suter, Eric Childress, efilmcritic.com. Join me every week to review movies, and we welcome you guys back. All right. Here we go. Colin,
mm-hmm.
Why don't you tell us about Free Birds? You're the only one that saw this one.
All right. Well, this is an animated film about a turkey, voiced by Owen Wilson, who gets pardoned at the beginning of the movie, gets pardoned by the President of the United States, and then is whisked away to the White House and subsequently Camp David, where he happens upon another turkey, voiced by Woody Harrelson, who has knowledge of a time machine. Long story short, the two turkeys go back in time to the very first Thanksgiving and do what they can to stop the Pilgrims and Indians from having turkey and thereby ending the tradition of turkey on Thanksgiving. Right away, I'm against this film.
I'm with you, Colin.
But in all seriousness, it's actually not a bad idea for an animated movie.
It's actually a terrific. It's a terrific idea for an animated film.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's one of two time travel movies we're going to talk about tonight. So it's not a bad idea, even though I'm not rooting for anybody to take turkey off of any menu. But
right. By the way, it's two time travel movies this week, and neither of them have anything to do with J.J. Abrams.
Right, exactly.
So I bring that up. Okay, go ahead.
But sadly, this is a continuation of what has been the saddest year for animated films, I think, ever. It continues a trend of really just sort of bland execution mixed with bland characters who seem not to be conjured up by clever storytellers, but from the famous actors giving them their voices. Even Amy Poehler, who of course plays the turkey love interest, even she can't make her character seem interesting or funny. Actually, the only funny character in the movie is the little girl who is the president's daughter, who, you know, takes the turkey home and loves him to death. But she's gone after the first, 5 or 10 minutes of the film, and then it's just the turkeys who aren't very funny, aren't very clever, aren't very interesting. And, the movie does have a few jokes and a few visual gags that are funny, but on the whole, it just sits there. And, no one's going to be inspired to substitute turkey for cheese pizza on Thanksgiving. So, which is kind of where the movie's headed. This is definitely not recommended. Sorry, parents. But, yeah, this is not going to be a fun one to sit through.
It has been a terrible year for animation, hasn't it?
Yep. Yeah, I mean, we have on the good side, there's, and by good, I mean like 3 stars, okay, The Croods, and I'm in the minority, I like Turbo, but that's it. Yeah. I mean, we had Monsters University from Pixar, which is terrible, might be their worst film. I have not seen Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs 2.
But I haven't either.
Any movie that has Meatballs 2 in the title should generally be avoided. And then you have Epic, which was just not good at all, and Despicable Me 2, which just kind of sat there. I mean, just nothing. I mean, the only thing great for this year, what's that?
Planes.
Oh, Planes. Yeah, I forgot about Planes.
Lord, Planes.
I mean, the only saving grace for this year is, I haven't seen Frozen yet, but there's Miyazaki's next movie is qualified for this year for awards, but won't be out until February of next year. And that's basically, that's your saving grace for animation for this year. I mean, it's just been bad.
Well, last year we had a good year. I mean, obviously the first thing that...
Great year.
Well, the first thing that I think of when I think of animation from last year is easily Paranorman.
Sure.
Which is absolutely one of the best animated movies in the past 10 years, without question.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, and you got that. You had Frankenweenie. You had the Pirates. You had Wreck-It Ralph. And, yeah. You know, there was some really terrific stuff last year.
Yeah, wow. That sucks. All right. All right. Eric, really quickly, I did watch this movie on demand, and now it's in theaters.
Yeah.
You briefly talked about it a couple of weeks ago. Yeah. Man of Tai Chi. Tell us about Man of Tai Chi.
Well, it was directed by Keanu Reeves.
Yeah!
Do I need to say any more? Okay. Well, it's Keanu Reeves clearly taking his love of what he learned in Kung Fu and the martial arts realm from The Matrix.
Right.
And applied it to this movie. It's a story of this this guy that's not down on his luck, and he could use a little extra money, and he gets recruited by an eccentric billionaire played by Keanu Reeves. To fight in this illegal underground fighting scheme that the cops are constantly trying to break up and can never find, much to, this guy does not know that these things are actually videotaped and put online for people to watch and to bet on and all this kind of good stuff. It's a goofy movie. As martial arts movies go. All you really care about are how good the fight scenes are, and the fight scenes, at certain points, are pretty damn terrific, actually. The guy that the main guy, I'm forgetting his name at the moment.
It's Tiger Chen.
Tiger Chen, that's it. Is really good. I only wish that Keanu Reeves just did not have to play the final bad boss and have to, to be the final fighter. Because clearly the film needs to be slowed down a little bit or sped up, in his case, to match wits with Tiger Chen. But if you just want, a goofy 90-minute, Tai Chi movie with Keanu Reeves doing some hilarious facial expressions, this is the movie for you.
I loved it, man. I thought it was a blast. I thought it was an absolute blast. I watched the other night, and I had a great time. And Keanu did a nice job directing this. I mean, the fight scenes are terrific. It moves along at a steady pace. It's a dumb movie, mm-hmm. but I really liked it. I thought it was very entertaining. It'd be fun to see on the big screen. It's playing in a few theaters in Chicago. I recommend it on demand, but if you want to get out there and see it on the big screen, there's a lot of really terrific fight sequences in it. It's playing in South Barrington, Yorktown, and at River East, but it's also available on demand. That's how I saw it, and that's how we reviewed it a couple of weeks ago. Eric reviewed it a couple of weeks ago, but I liked it. I had a blast.
I have to share, because I saw the movie at the Toronto Film Festival, and I was at the public screen where Keanu was there.
Yeah.
So he got to do the Q&A afterwards, and I've never seen him more lively in my life. Like, he clearly was very happy with the movie, he was happy to be there, all this kind of stuff. And someone from the audience asked him, why is it better to play the bad guy in a movie? And he, without blinking, he looked at her and goes, because bad guys have no problems. Greatest answer I've ever heard in my life.
Oh, I love Keanu, man. Yeah. I just love that guy. All right. Man of Tai Chi. Okay, we got a couple of more movies we got to review here. We're going to get to them. Colin and Eric from eFilmCritic.com join me every Saturday night for the movie reviews right here on WGN. As you walk along Hollywood Boulevard. Nick DiGilio here on Chicago's very own 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate studio here until midnight. You can hear me regularly weekday mornings, 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. I'm your overnight guy, Monday through Friday, and we have a great time. And always hang out after 5 o'clock with Steve Cochran for the first part of his show. It's always a lot of fun. It's awesome. And you can get our podcast, too. Just go to WGNRadio.com. You can go to iTunes and subscribe to the podcast, full-length podcast. If you miss any part of any show, Monday through Friday or Saturday evenings, they're all available on the podcast. I also want to mention very quickly, on our website at WGNRadio.com, we have posted a video of me giving an overnight tour of the studios and of Traffic Central, and we're going to show you what it's like to be in here on the graveyard shift with the skeleton crew when there's only us, there's only the small amount of us running the station. We basically run the place from 2 to 5 a.m. And we're going to do a series of videos where we're going to go into different parts of the offices and studios here at WGN and, you know, raid people's desks and go through stuff. And the very first video is up. If you want to check it out, you can see the studio where I'm sitting right now, where I'm working. You can see the booth where Craig is, and you can see Traffic Central as well. And we're going to show you all of the cool things right here all over the seventh floor and give you a bunch of videos, a series of them. The first one is up, and it's really a lot of fun, so we hope you hope you like it. And take a look at it right now. Go to WGNradio.com and click onto that video and watch the first part of the Overnight Skeleton Crew Tour, where we run the show here on WGN. So you can get a behind-the-scenes look right here. All right, movie reviews, we're back. Colin, Eric, hi, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
All righty, then. Eric, tell us about Time.
Okay, About Time is the latest film from Richard Curtis, who gave us Love Actually and wrote Notting Hill and Four Weddings and a Funeral. And this story involves a young man played by Domhnall Gleeson, who discovers on his birthday that his family, at least the men in his family, carry with them a very interesting secret, as he's told by his father, played by Bill Nighy, and that they're able to travel back in time. The complications involved in doing this is basically just going into a dark place and clenching your fists and your eyes really tight. So you know you're back at a certain spot that you want to travel back in time to. It's just that simple. As he's, you know, progressing in his life, as he's becoming an adult, he meets a young lady played by Rachel McAdams as sort of a meet-cute in sort of a darkened bar, this sort of a weird dating ritual. Discovering that things don't go quite as smoothly, and he uses his powers to go back in time and correct them, pretty much like Bill Murray did in Groundhog Day, to a certain extent. This movie is not so much about time travel, but about just sort of like, you know, how life sort of progresses and how time travel, if you had that ability to fix little things in your life, not sort of grand things the way Marty McFly does in Back to the Future, you know, would they be, you know, for the better or for the worse? And the film doesn't really play up the time travel angle as much as you might think. It is played for laughs here and there. Sometimes it's played for pathos. Sometimes it's played for good. But then the rules, you know, start to creep up a little bit towards the end, but not so much that you would even notice, because this is a film that you could almost take the time travel stuff out, and it would feel just kind of like just sort of an average Richard Curtis film about two people, you know, meeting as youths and sort of progressing to, you know, the stages of adulthood, including marriage and children and all that kind of stuff. And it's a weird film. It's a weird film in that extent, I was never quite sure where it was going, even though it progresses at a pretty even keel. I don't know if that's necessarily a positive. There's definitely, you know, a lot of things to like about the film. I mean, the leads are very charming. There are some good laughs in the film. I don't know if the ultimate message of the film is as grand as they might think. The one rule of time travel seems to be that once you have children, your life pretty much stops. And I think a lot of people know that going in to having children without having seen this movie. I have a weird sort of mixed reaction to the movie. Colin very much put it in perspective as we were leaving the theater. He kind of put his finger exactly on it, and he'll tell you why that is. So it's kind of a mixed reception. I liked it while I was watching it, but I liked it less the more I thought of it.
Okay. All right, Colin, what do you think?
I had kind of the opposite reaction, was that I liked it more the more I thought of it. I liked that the time travel stuff never becomes so convoluted that you forget you're watching a film about the small moments in life. The movie has, you know, very little in the way of forward momentum, which, you know, can be a fault while you're watching it, but this is a film that really is about those small moments of life that you wish you could change or take back. It's not all hinged upon, you know,
time travel romantic comedy. You think that, that everything is going to hinge on the two leads finding each other at the end and being together. But this movie isn't like that. It spans, I think, about 10 years or so in the lives of these people, and it really feels like you're watching people live real lives while occasionally breaking the laws of science to fix awkward moments or personal tragedies. A lot of characters come into play in this film. It's not just about the young couple. It's about the families, too. And I really like that about this movie. It's a movie that is about, real life, and that doesn't always make for a compelling narrative in a film, but I think in this case, it works. I think you just kind of have to adjust your expectations going in as to what to expect from this film. And if you do, I think you'll be pleased. I do recommend it.
Yeah, I really like this. It is, and you're right. Both of you guys are right. It's a strange film. It wasn't what I expected it to be. You're talking to a guy who, by the way, liked the other time travel romantic comedy that Rachel McAdams was in, and I think I'm the only person on the planet that liked that movie. It was the what was it called? Time Traveler's Wife.
Yes.
Yeah, which is a film that I actually liked. This, however, Richard Curtis is a really interesting writer. He's a solid director. I mean, Love Actually is a really good film, and I mean, Richard Curtis goes all the way back to, he basically created Blackadder, which for right there he gets a pass on everything as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah,
he could do whatever the hell he wants because he created the Blackadder, which is just genius. But I just think he's a really interesting writer who kind of is in this genre now. He's sort of definitely cemented himself in the romantic comedy genre. But he's doing things within this genre that not a lot of people are doing, or at least having the courage to do, or the intelligence to do. He takes his time. He fleshes out a lot of the characters. The cliches that are inherent in the genre seem to be fresh. I don't know how he does it, but in his hands, they seem to be fresh. I'm not the biggest fan of Four Weddings and a Funeral. That's not one of my favorites. But I thought Notting Hill was a terrific film. I really did, and I don't care what anybody says. I mean, you could call me a wuss, whatever. I think that's a really good film. I like Love Actually. This one, it goes to places I didn't think it would go to. I think the supporting cast is fantastic. For Bill Nighy rules. That's the first and foremost. But Lindsay Duncan is outstanding as his mom. And I just thought that this is a really interesting observational film. And you're right. To me, the time travel thing is not the focus of the movie at all. And I don't know. It's hard for me to tell people that don't worry about the time travel thing if that's an issue for you. Because, some people are like, I want to see some time travel movie. Because that's really not what this movie's about. I think it's a really sort of brilliantly observed film about families and relationships and lives and these little moments in your life that you will forget or will always remember. There's a lot going on in this movie, and I really liked it. Because I went in not expecting much. I don't know why. My expectations were kind of low, and this is not the movie I thought it was going to be. It's not at all the movie I thought it was going to be, and I mean that in a positive way. And this guy, this Domhnall Gleeson, is where is he from?
He's been a few things. He was in Anna Karenina.
Yeah,
he was in Anna Karenina. He was in Dread. He's been making the rounds.
Yeah, well, I like him. I really do. I think he's a really likable character. And Rachel McAdams is just lovely. I don't even know what to say anymore. I just think she's wonderful. I mean, she's made some bad choices in the past and some stupid movies, but I really like Rachel McAdams, and she really did it for me. I mean, ever since Mean Girls, I've liked her, and I really loved her in. I always go back to Red Eye. Red Eye is one of my favorite, seriously, one of my favorite Rachel McAdams performances. But she's terrific in this movie. I like this movie a lot. I really did. And I recommend it to everybody. Really, it's a really fun. And again, once again, as we always have to defend ourselves, we are now talking positively about a romantic comedy. So all the people that are like, hey, you don't like him because it's a romantic comedy and blah, 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 shut up.
Do people still say that?
I don't think so.
Okay.
But I'm just mad. So anyway, I hold a grudge. And by the way, here's a thing I find really interesting. I really like this film, by the way. We all three of us are recommending About Time. I really like that if you like this movie, others have liked it, you will like Elysium.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, it says on IMDb, other people who like this movie that you might like as well, you would like Elysium.
Okay.
Don't understand that
that's
at all.
Right. And that it's not like what we expected it to be?
I guess, yeah. So, I guess so. All right, I don't understand that connection at all. All right, one more movie to review.
I just want to say one thing after I walked out of this movie. It occurred to me, like, how would you like to be Rupert Grint watching this movie and realizing there's all these actors in it who are in their early 20s with red hair, and he's not one of them? Like, hello?
That's a good
I'm a Harry
point.
Potter guy That's over here. I'm not working much. Yeah. Hello?
Very good point.
He's in CBGB.
He is in CBGB. That's right.
Which
Alan saw 20 times. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back. We got one more movie to review right here on WGN. Nick DiGilio here on Chicago's very own 720 WGN. Live in the Allstate Studios, wrapping up the movie reviews. One more movie to talk about. It's the big one this week. Eric and Colin are here. Colin, tell us about Ender's Game.
All right. Well, this is based on a popular sci-fi novel from Orson Scott Card, and it's set in the future after Earth has been attacked by an alien species that is located on a faraway planet, but who haven't attacked in a while. Harrison Ford and Viola Davis play recruiters who notice a kid who has extraordinary gifts as a strategist and as a fighter. And they recruit him and train him in this elite academy that trains young kids to fight against the aliens if there's another attack. Because this kid is so perfect at everything, he's not well-liked by some of his classmates, but doesn't matter. He's eventually promoted and disliked by a new group of classmates. But eventually he earns everyone's respect, and when his team is put to the challenge, they rise to the occasion because of his skills as a leader and a commander and a strategist. Okay, so first let me say that I've never read the book. I was actually pretty ignorant about it until this movie came out. I had no idea it had been around so long and it was considered unfilmable. I just don't follow sci-fi literature that much. I never have. So to me, this is just another movie. And as a movie, it sucks. The story has no tension. Every scene is about this kid being perfect at everything, so there's no sense of danger for him or the sense that, he might not get out of this situation alive, and there's no villain, of course. It's like a training film. That's it. And these kids are annoying on this ship. I felt like I was on a ship full of Jaden Smiths.
The
aliens, once we see the aliens, they're not very interesting, nor are they even much of a threat anyway, because we're told later that they haven't attacked in a while and they're tucked away in this part of the galaxy that has nothing to do with Earth, so what? So whatever parable or social commentary the novel was trying to make when it came out, completely lost here. Nothing of the sort is fleshed out in that respect. And even the big battle scene or big training scene, whatever you want to call it, at the end, is a waste because you don't know what's going on. It's so hyper-edited and confusing. You don't know what you're watching. It's just a lot of noise. And, this is a big waste of time.
All right. Eric.
Yeah, I totally agree. The thing that Colin points out is that there are no real stakes in this movie. I mean, are we waiting for the aliens to show up again? If so, what are the stakes then exactly? Are we watching, Starship Troopers? But no, we're watching Starship Troopers. Well, hell yeah. I'd rather be watching Starship Troopers 2. at least that has some fine nudity in it. But anyway, you're watching Starship Troopers if they never get out of training camp, okay? And, here's a movie a story that clearly, has loftier intentions as far as commentary about war and children, and you could even, comment something about, drone technology these days. It even has that going for it. But its needle sits firmly in the middle. On one side you have, you could go the complete, sort of fun route like The Last Starfighter, or you can go, the other route and go real, sort of super serious parable sci-fi stuff. And the movie just sits there firmly in the middle. It has no intention of going either which way, and winds up becoming so self-serious that you can't really take it seriously. The movie is just a big, boring stiff of a film. And then when you get to, you know, it's sort of its resolution, and you go, oh, that's what the movie is about. The movie's over, and you just go like, well, I would rather see a movie made at the end of this movie than what we sat through for the first 2 hours. This is an absolute stiff of a movie that should be avoided.
Yeah, I agree with you guys 100%. And the key word here is boring. I was bored out of my mind during this movie. I didn't care about anything that happened, and I didn't like the kids, and I don't know what Harrison Ford's doing anymore. He's another one of these guys that just, you know, except for being a little bit over the top in that Jackie Robinson movie, he hasn't done anything where he, you know, well, actually, he had a little fun in that Cowboys, and he was the only thing in Cowboys and Aliens that didn't suck. Was he at least, that was the first time I'd seen him in maybe 15 years looking like he didn't want to kill everybody. You know
he
what I mean?
He was semi-interested in that movie.
Yeah, it just, yeah, there was, yeah. You know, there was a moment, but yeah, this is a terrible movie. I've never read the books. I didn't know anything about it. And everybody who's concerned that the author is going to make a ton of money off of this, he's not. And, you know, the only reason anybody really knows a lot about this movie is because of the controversy about the book and about the author. You know, you guys know the whole story. He's like a raging homophobe. Yeah. That's the only reason this movie wouldn't. I mean, the only reason this movie isn't just being thrown out and, you know, dismissed in 5 minutes.
Nick, real quick, I did try to read the book many, many years ago. Didn't even get past chapter one.
Okay. Well, I don't know about the
book.
From
the book to the movie.
I don't know about the book, but the movie sucks. So, Ender's Game. That's wow. And it, you know,
what you're saying, Nick, is that the author's not going to get anything in the back end.
Oh, wait a minute. Hold on a second. What the hell? that was good, Eric. That was
Thank
good.
You.
Were you saving that one up, or
I wrote it this morning.
Oh, very good. I like that. That's very good, and it's funny, and it will also piss that author off.
Yes.
So there you go. Good
Blue really is the warmest color.
Hello.
You know?
All right. Wait.
Hey,
Hold on a second. Okay. Next week, Dallas Buyers Club. That's the big one. Is Thor coming out next week?
Thor coming out next week, and I'm sure something else is coming out. But.
Okay, we got a lot to talk about next week. It's going to be, again, a very short show. Yes.
And I'm hosting a screening of American Movie at the Studio Movie Grill this coming Wednesday night in Wheaton, Illinois.
Okay, Wednesday night, Wheaton, Illinois. Check out Colin's screening of American Movie after you come Tuesday night to see my screening of Dr. Strangelove. But American Movie, it's only $1, right?
Yep, only a buck, and you can buy yourself a nice dinner and eat it while you're watching the movie. It's good food there.
Cool. In
Just
Wheaton,
like the movie
American Movie will be screened, and Colin will be your host. All right, guys, we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks.
All right, take care. There you go. We'll be right back.